of legislation around the regulation. It's mainly amendments. The one is, we usually call it Nussbach Amendment. We just coined that name. This Pindi is smiling. The other one is about just the electricity regulation. The department is around, welcome, NERSA. I don't know who else is around, I just assume. It's just NERSA and the department. Welcome. I just hope this time, you know, once the briefing is done, the process would really make it possible for us to handle the amendments in time, because if you observe, last year we didn't touch any legislation. Now the danger is that once legislation starts coming this year, it's going to be chock-a-block, and we won't have any breathing space for other work. Whereas it is important, honorable members, that whatever work we do, it gets balanced. Of course, I'm just making a comment, not that we can do otherwise. You know, for example, the ISMO bill, I mean, one has been trying to check it, you know, up and down, and I hope, Sisnidi, you will just guide us as well as to how far is it. Because I thought we would be handling it. In fact, we would be in the you know, initial stages of processing it. But nevertheless, you're welcome to bring, you know, other legislation. The reason is that why I'm making this comment is because, you know, ideally it would have been lovely to have the you know, any legislative processing to be fairly distributed, so that in between you can be able to do oversight work. In between you can be able to do a little bit of you know, public participation, and also to engage one or another on international issues as well. But nevertheless, that's where things stand, and I hope the honourable members will take the bull by its horns and do as much as we can, not only on those two amendments that are going to be presented today, but also on any other legislation that's forthcoming down the line. That said and done, can we then get apologies?
Thank you, Chairperson. We've received the following apologies. Honourable Tintu and Honourable Hadebe, who's attending classes. Honourable Matibela, who's still on sick leave. And Honourable Salau also indicated that he's running late, but he will be joining us, Chairperson. So those are the apologies, Chair.
Okay. Thanks very much. I shall hand over to the department now. Certainly, if you could start with the National Energy Regulator Act, and then thereafter we'll take questions, any clarifications and comments from members.
Thank you, Chair, for giving us the opportunity to make this presentation today. Chair, I think I must, even before we can start, I think we need to address the issue of the ISMO bill. Chair, in the experience I've had in government, when it comes to legislation, a specific process usually is followed. You take your legislation to cabinet. Cabinet approves it for public comment. If there are not any serious comments, then, or alternatively, some of the comments can be accommodated, then you take it and you expect the state law advisor to certify it, tag it, and then bring it to parliament. In the process, during the public participation, you take the bill to NECMEC. And where you do the discussion thing. And most of the time, in the past, it has been an easy process, but by the time the state law advisor had completed tagging the bill, already the MedLife report is ready. Unfortunately, the state law advisor has insisted that even before they can certify it, they need a MedLife report. And we took the bill to MedLife in August last year. We've been deliberating with the social partner at MedLife since August last year. I only received the finalized report on Monday. So that's basically now the reason why we came here today. It was able just to kind of refresh the committee on some of the impact that is going to be seen, especially on the electricity regulation bill, of the deliberations that will be taking place around the ISMO bill. So we're expecting now that the state law advisor is going to now tag it, and then it will and certify it, and then it will be ready for the deliberation by the committee. So, Chair, apologies that it has not gone as quickly as we would have preferred, but I suppose, Chair, some of these democratic processes we need to entertain. Chair, what we're presenting today is the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill together with the National Energy Regulator Bill. These two amendments, as I indicated, Chair, they are in line with the Minister's Performance Agreement that he signed with the President. In the said Performance Agreement, Minister committed that she's going to streamline the energy regulation in order to ensure that we have an energy security in this country. Chair, it is the government's responsibility at this point in time in the electricity sector to ensure that there is a security of supply. So legislation has got to be amended accordingly to ensure that there is a security of supply. While we're grappling with the issues of security of supply, Chair, South African consumer has got to be protected against high tariffs at the same time. So that means then, therefore, also again, even the way we regulate, that will mean then in terms of the activities that are being done by the regulator, not only they should be able to stand to scrutiny, but the public must have an appeal mechanism where should they not be happy with what was decided by the regulator, there must be a mechanism to appeal. Because, Chair, as you are aware at this point in time, when the regulator has made a decision, it's final. You can only take them to court on review. In other words, you can only take them to court provided you believe that they didn't follow due process. So whether you are happy with 25% or 30% or 50% for that matter, there is nothing you can do about it. So we want to create a mechanism where we're going to be able to say, should then you are unhappy with whatever the regulator has ruled upon, then you should have a way to be able to go and appeal to another higher body in that regard. Chair, basically, this is the slew of legislation where in the electricity sector where we're trying to streamline the regulatory regime. We have had an opportunity to implement some of these regulations. However, the idea now is to come back to the committee and say we need to do certain things. I mean, Chair, you recall there was a big story around renewable energy feed-in tariffs. We need to make provision for that into the legislation. So those are all that's basically what what we're trying to do. So the ISMO bill is going to create an independent system and market operator that is going to ensure more transparent regulation, but also ensure private sector participation in order to relieve some of the pressure ESCOM has around the funding mechanism for electricity. In the meantime, the Regulation Act must allow for what we are calling predetermination of tariffs, which is the risk. It must allow for that. And also what we're saying is that it must also allow for licensing of the dispatch mechanism, if that is in the Regulation Act. In the meantime, also, the regulator also must be able to respond to the South African public and to the South African requirements. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to request then Ms. Ngobeni to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Chairperson, Deputy Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to start with the National Energy Regulator Act as indicated in the program.
Maybe, not maybe. I suppose we should know, we know this name, but the one who's speaking, we don't know.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Sorry, let me introduce the people that are with me today. That is Mr. Maduna Ngoveni. He is the specialist responsible for the electricity and policy regulation. And also, he was also in, involved very heavily in the bidding process for the IPPs, renewable energy IPPs. And on my left-hand side is Mr. Sandile Ndlambe, who is the executive manager in the Director General's Office. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, TG. I will start with the electricity regulation, the electricity energy, the National Energy Regulator Act. But before I go into the amendment themselves, I will sort of try and sketch the picture on how it looks like. The Act provides for four full-time members and five part-time regulator members. When we talk about regulator members, in this case, we're actually talking about the board itself. From the four full-time regulator members, you've got the CEO, Chief Executive Officer, and then you also get full-time regulator members, each responsible for the different sector, which is electricity, pipeline, and petroleum pipeline. And while the CEO is full-time, he's also a regulator member sitting in the board, and is responsible for running the sector or running the regulator, you know, the day-to-day activities of the regulator across the different sectors. But I will talk about that later when I'm dealing with the amendment themselves, because the Act itself doesn't necessarily specify that function across the different sectors in terms of the reporting mechanism. And the Act allows the regulator to establish different committees to execute certain functions of the regulator as delegated. And these committees are required to be chaired by a full-time regulator member. And the decisions of the committee are regarded as the decisions of the regulator. This is the structure of the regulator as it stands. You've got the chairperson there, then you've got the four full-time regulator members. I think they're lacking the other part, the five part-time regulator members I was mentioning. And you will see that you've got the sections that are sort of outlined, that are sort of talked about earlier on, which is the electricity, the gas, and the petroleum pipeline. And you will see that the full-time regulator members, they sort of, in a way, sit there on top, you know, on those different sections, and then with the CEO. If you look at the structure, and underneath then you've got the secretary. If you look at the structure as it stands, there is no clear reporting mechanism in terms of the full-time regulator members and the CEO. One would assume that there is some synergy across the board, but the Act itself does not necessarily specify how that can be done. I think some of the things I've already mentioned on the analysis. The fact that the reporting mechanism is not clearly defined in the Act, it then creates a conflict, you know, within the full-time regulator members, because the reporting mechanism is not fully defined on how that should work. And as a result, we want to clarify that when we deal with our amendment. And the Act also provides for the regulator to sit as a tribunal. And when we're doing the analysis, we realize that probably it's not good for the regulator to sit as a tribunal and adjudicate on its own decisions that they have made, which means it's convenient at this point, because the regulator needs to change tax and say, okay, now you are appealing, then the seat can adjudicate on the very same decision. But if such decision were to be challenged, especially in certain matters, we would like to believe that we might not win that case in court. Just to highlight the objectives for the amendment before I go into the actual amendment. The whole exercise is about making the decisions of the regulator credible, and also in making those decisions of the regulator credible, we need to have an appeal board. I'm going to talk about it later in the process. And also to improve governance and accountability at the regulator level, and improve the working relationship among the regulator members. Because we all know that if the working relationship between the regulator members, if it's not good, it's likely that even the outcome or the decisions that will be made by the regulator might tend to be not of credibility that we would like to see. Let me go straight to the amendment now. After taking into account the background that I've mentioned, we still maintain the fact that we want to have an independent regulator, and the regulator must be credible so that it attracts private sector investment, as the DG has mentioned earlier on, that private sector investment into the country is key, given the fact that Eskom is required to build so much power plant in the next few years, coming years, and they might not have the financial muscles to do that. And I think I've mentioned the point that relates to the regulator sitting at the tribunal, and I'm just going to go straight into the actual amendment. One, the first change that we are doing into the Act is that we are providing for a full-time commissioner with three deputy commissioners, each commissioner responsible for a specific section. By putting that in place, we are making it clear that the reporting mechanism is not confused. You've got one person in charge of the entity, and then the other people, they sort of regulator or commissioners will be sort of responsible for the different sectors, but the reporting to the commission. And I think if you look at this structure, it's similar to the competition commission structure, where you've got a commissioner and a deputy commissioner helping the regulator in terms of helping the commissioner in terms of making the decisions that are required. And then secondly, we are also removing the tribunal function, which is currently in the Act, and we are saying probably we don't need a tribunal, we don't need the regulator to sit as a tribunal, we rather have an independent body, which is independent from the regulator, providing an opportunity to the public to appeal against the decisions of the regulator. So that when the regulator takes a particular decision, the regulator should be sure that that decision could, if get contested at the appeals board, they can still maintain it, and the appeals board will concur with the regulator in that particular decision. And we are saying the tribunal itself must be part-time, but there is a provision that allows the minister, as the work, you know, increase at the regulator, to make certain members of the tribunal permanent if the need arise. I've already mentioned the fact that the tribunal itself, it gives the whole process credibility and allow the stakeholders, the public at large, to sort of contest whatever decision that the regulator might have made. In concluding, just to mention a few things, that the amendment is actually trying to make sure that the regulated entities are regulated in an efficient manner, in a manner that will ensure that the private sector participates into the space, especially in generation, comfortably. And And we would like to believe that the challenges facing the regulator in terms of governance will be resolved through this proposal. And the department would like to propose the amendment to provide effective and efficient regulatory framework. We believe that if we set up the structure of the regulator in a manner that we propose, the regulation of the industry will be even more effective. This bill was published for public comment on the 8th of December last year, and we actually extended the period for public comment to 10 February this year. The intention was that we want to close somewhere January, end of January. Yeah. But now, because of the fact that people were sort of complaining that it's during holidays and stuff like that, then we extended it to 12th of December, the 10th of February. The bill has been submitted to NEDLAC, and I think the DJ has already alluded to the fact that the bill will be submitted to NEDLAC after we have refined all the comments that we have received from the stakeholders. The DJ has already alluded to the NEDLAC processes that we need to comply with in terms of developing legislation. I will end there in terms of the first presentation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Pa Martin. Honorable members, welcome, Honorable Mloto. We're just in time to catch up with this interesting amendment. Honorable members, the floor is yours. Questions and comments? Honorable Ross?
Chairperson, just to comment, of course, we welcome the restructuring of the regulator. The more independent, of course, the better, and that's what the public needs to do. And then the appeals mechanism, it needs to be welcomed. Thank you.
I was going to say, what's the cost implication to this whole issue?
Okay. Then I'm locked.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would be interested to know about the future structure. Where would the CEO of the new entity be placed, given that the initial structure that you just showed us gave rise to conflicting reporting lines? How would the new reporting lines pan out?
Of course, when you say location, it's also the status. They go hand in hand. From my side, I would be interested for the subcommittee decisions, their status, because as Nelly said, currently the subcommittees, their decisions are equivalent to the decisions of the regulator as a whole. What?
Mr. Chair, I think we should have added when they've been delegated to do so. They still need to be ratified by the...
Oh, okay, okay. You can see I really picked that one. Yeah. Okay, fine. If you could just respond to the questions, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the support from Honorable Ross. On the issue, Honorable Lucas, of the cost implication of the new structure, the idea here is that we need to ensure that the cost is kept at minimum. You will recall that in any case, as we speak, we do have 5 part-time regulator members, of which are part of the structure, and also we do have 4 full-time regulator members. So the idea here is to be able to make sure that there is minimal change in the cost, but and the maximum change in the outcomes of what the regulator does. So in line with what Honorable Mulato actually asked, can I just request to go back to the structure? Yeah. If I can just take you back to the structure as it stands, the idea here,
Honorable Mloto is to have, as I said, a commission. In other words, it's just a different structure. But also, and then what you have is going to be an appeals board that is likely to be led by a retired court judge. So in other words, what we have then, as we stand, so where there is a chairperson, we are going to be removing the chairperson and four part-time members. Instead, they are going to have a CEO. And then underneath, they are going to have the deputy commissioner. So the CEO is going to be a commissioner, while what is termed full-time regulator members now are going to be the deputy commissioner. So in other words, instead of all of them at the same level as the CEO, they'll have to report to the CEO. And also, just to cover the other issues, the current regulator members, full-time, when their contracts were signed, it was indicated that the legislation is likely to be changed. So then for the acceptance of their current contracts are premised on the fact that they are aware that there will be changes to their legislation which might impact the reporting lines. And then, Chair, with regards to the status, Chair, I will seek your assistance in that regard. What exactly are you looking at?
No, you've clarified. But just out of interest, you people are concentrating on piped gas. I know I'm guilty. I may have not looked at the Act itself in depth and meticulously. Am I assuming incorrectly or correctly that, or if my expectation was that the energy regulator should regulate anything that's within the energy sector. Now the question is, why piped gas? Shouldn't it just regulate anything that's energy, including unpiped gas, if I can use that English?
Yes, thank you, Chair. That is one of the areas also we are looking at streamlining. Chair, you will recall that we've got various pieces of legislation that the regulator has been given powers over. Now, they've been given powers to regulate piped gas and also petroleum pipelines and the whole of the electricity value chain. Yes, we do admit, Chair, that there is a bit of an anomaly that they, on the electricity side, they regulate everything, and yet when it comes to the liquid fuels, some parts are regulated by the department. For example, the refineries and the actual petrol price is regulated by the department, and while the gas, like LPG, is also being regulated by the department. We do admit that that is an anomaly, but it's in the legislation that we intend to bring to Parliament this year to be able to have a situation where the regulator will have an opportunity to regulate everything in the energy space while government develops policy and regulations in that space. However, that is still going to be coming to the in front of Parliament, because those anomalies are currently residing within the current legislation.
Thank you very much. Any other input? But your last comments are very interesting. Sometimes we take things for granted. Of course, we'll be looking at those developments with keenness, because I'm sure rationalization of the regulatory regime for energy is also quite helpful. Safe to say that I saw in your last point you were saying that amongst other things, one of the highlights or primary focuses for this amendment is to ensure that private sector participation is facilitated, and obviously investment is attracted. But I'm sure we'll also concur that the importance of faith to structuring the appeals mechanism, particularly for the ordinary person, is actually also on the other hand, advancing democracy, because it allows people to, you cannot run away from the fact that when it comes to terrorists, you know, the police, an excitement, throughout the country. So that kind of awareness has been growing, steadfastly in the past few years. You know, there's been a lot of activity in that area. So an appeal mechanism surely would do well to allow, the ordinary citizen, one way or another, to express their views and to engage the authorities around issues like the terrorists. Electricity tariff specifically. That be the case, can we then move to the second amendment?
Again, thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I think what we just would like also again to do a recap for the members. What is it that the electricity regulation seeks to do? It seeks to ensure that we are providing service delivery in an effective manner in a monopoly environment. Because, Chair, you'll recall that unlike other structures elsewhere in the world, we have one service provider, if we can put it that way, provides electricity through the value chain. In other areas where you have competitive markets, most of the time the market actually balances itself out. So in other words, even when it comes to the setting of the tariffs, the tariffs are set by the market. But in our case, that's not the case. So therefore, you need to have legislation to ensure that there is proper service delivery in that kind of environment. But also, it seeks to protect captive customers. So in other words, we need to ensure that customers in South Africa are protected against probably over-ambitious tariff determination. And also, it needs to ensure that the service providers, they charge justifiable tariffs and hence therefore it is also sustainable. But also it provides a discussion platform to both the consumer and the service provider. As Chair will probably be aware, the law allows for what you call customer forums where the providers can have an opportunity to educate the public on the services that they provide. Not just about telling them to save electricity, but also just to let them know what they need to do in order to ensure the safety, the safe use of electricity. Now, in terms of the background, Chairperson, in what we've taken here, we've just taken the big chunks of what is covered in the electricity regulation. The electricity regulation provides for the development of the integrated resource plan by the National Sphere of Government. It also requires the regulator to license according to this plan. It also provides the minister to make a determination under the Section 34 of the Act, and it also allows for the minister to determine the buyer, seller, in that regard for to be used in the generation of electricity. Chair, maybe I need to just to pause a little bit here and maybe try and explain why do we have this clause, because there have been a number of concerns around it. Chairperson, it is our considered view that in a monopoly situation where a government entity provide the service, government must be held accountable when the lights go off. So, and it is our considered view, Chair, that if government is to be held accountable, they must be appropriately empowered in the law in order to execute what needs to be done. In this regard, then what we had requested then therefore is that the minister must make sure then that she or he determines the buyer and the seller of the electricity so that then the public can hold her accountable when that is not being done. So that is our point of departure around this matter. Now, in terms of the new generation regulation, from this legislation, we have developed a number of new generation regulations, of which it outlines the process to develop the IRP and to provide linkages between the determination and the IRP, which is not clearly outlined in the Act, but it also outlines the procurement process that needs to be followed, as we did during the new renewable energy IPP program. Now, in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act, Chair, the Act does not provide for licensing of dispatch, yet it is critical for IPP participation. Chair, if I can indicate that in the independent system and market operator, one of its duties it needs to do is what is called an electricity dispatch. Electricity dispatch, what we're referring to here, we're referring to how the power stations are lined up to dispatch electricity. Chair, you know that electricity cannot be stored. Because electricity cannot be stored, you've got to evacuate it as it's being generated. Now, what usually happens then in that regard is that you usually have to line your power stations up with making sure that you dispatch all the cheapest ones first. In other words, the ones that are cheapest to run first, and then later on you can dispatch the most expensive. If I can just indicate to you, Chair, the older fleet of power plants, especially coal, they are the cheapest to dispatch, while the what is called an OCGT, which is an open cycle gas turbine, which runs on diesel, is the most expensive. So therefore, you need them therefore to make sure that you plan this activity appropriately, because that will also impact on the operations of the company, and also it has an impact on the tariff at the end of the day. Because if you are going to be running the most expensive stations too early and too long, that will have an impact of having higher tariffs. So hence, therefore, we are saying that this activity has got to be licensed by the regulator, and the regulator must be able to monitor that it's done appropriately. But currently, the Act does not provide for the licensing of the dispatch. So that's one of the things that we need to look into in the Electricity Regulation Act. At the moment, the regulator covers that under the transmission license. In other words, dispatch is what I would call the electrons. So in other words, and then the transmission, I'll call that the wires. So basically what they do is that the wires and the electrons are regulated simultaneously, which probably will need to be unpacked a little bit. And in terms of the trading, in the Electricity Regulation Act as it stands, trading is regarded as buying or selling of power. And this definition is very broad, and therefore we need to ensure that we streamline it. And then there is an issue around the expropriation of land for the use for either building transmission lines or building power plants, basically what we call a servitude. At the moment, the Act provides for the Minister of Public Works to expropriate land for electricity infrastructure, and the Minister is required to provide recommendations to the Minister of Public Works on the request by the licensee. What usually happens is that whoever is going to be building, then therefore they need to make an application to the Minister of Energy, who is going to make recommendation to the Minister of Public Works. We foresee that there is likely more and more requirements for the land is going to be made in future as we build more and more of power plants. Now, in that regard, so what is it that we intend to do in the legislation? First and foremost, we have a whole section that is dealing with the RP in the bill. Members will recall that it took us about 18 months to develop the integrated resource plan. The reason being, there is no process that has been outlined in the Act. So therefore, we need then therefore to have this process outlined in the Act on how do we develop an integrated resource plan, how do we engage in the consultative process, who gets consulted, at what level. So that is what we intend to do now in the electricity regulation bill amendment. And also, we are also basically requesting that the regulator will be asked to license according to that determination that has been done by the minister in accordance with the IRP. And then in terms of the determination, what we are basically saying here is that we need to have coherence between the IRP, the determination that is made by the minister, and the licensing framework. Because we're trying to avoid a situation where a bidder, as it's happening now, bidders have been approved by the department, but they still need to go to the regulator to ask for the license. Now, it would be very, very tragic if a situation arises, which probably is not going to happen, but which does have a possibility of happening, where you have been designated as the preferred bidder, but you can't get a license to build a power plant. So somehow that needs to be streamlined in the legislation. Now, in terms of on the IPP program, we have inserted a section outlining again the procurement framework, because it's not going to be enough that the minister can make a determination, but before she can make that determination, a proper procurement framework must be in place. It must have been done, and then minister will do a determination based on that procurement framework. And then with regards to the trading, again, we're saying that not only are we streamlining in that regard, but also we want to outline different categories of trading, and also we'll be requesting the regulator to license accordingly. And then in terms of the tariff approval, as I've indicated before, is that there was a big discussion around the renewable energy feed-in tariff. Now we are empowering the regulator in the law to be able now to set predetermined tariffs, which was not there before. And therefore, also, we want to have a situation where the regulator can be able to predetermine license conditions to bidders bidding under the IPP program. So effectively, we are trying to ensure then that the regulator is appropriately empowered. And then also in terms of transmission planning, we are looking at ensuring that the transmission licensee, which will be ESCOM, is empowered to develop a transmission plan. And therefore, then they can be able to make sure that they request the tariff allowance accordingly. And of course, it will be expected that the plan will be approved by the regulator after consultation with the minister and the buyer to ensure the alignment with the IRP. And then in terms of the expropriation, we firmly believe that the current process is cumbersome. In fact, we have had an experience where it has taken us almost 4 years to expropriate the land for the transmission network. So what we're trying to do now is trying to ensure that the minister is empowered to expropriate the land at the request of the licensee. However, we're saying that the cost of expropriation, because, by the way, here the expropriation will have to be, it's not expropriation without compensation. It's expropriation with compensation. Hence, therefore, the licensee must cover the cost of that expropriation. And then the regulator may provide technical advice to the minister on expropriation matters. Now, in terms, to conclude, Chairperson, the proposed amendment, we believe that it will expedite the establishment of new generation capacity, and it will provide the said alignment between buyer, procurer, and the regulator. And also, we have tried to ensure that we provide certainty to some of the areas which can be misinterpreted. And we published the bill in December after approval by Cabinet, and the closing date is on the 17th of February. And then she will take it to NEDLAC before it is tabled here in Parliament. So, Chair, as much as we have indicated what we intend to do, we still believe that there's still an opportunity for comments, which we'd be happy to incorporate should there be an opportunity to do so. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got just three questions. The first question is around the electricity dispatch. You're indicating that the current arrangement is that the regulator would determine that in terms of the transmission license. But the question that I would want to pose is following the exposition that you just made on the order of the lineup. Is that the order that the regulator considers, or how does it work currently? Second question would be on the background. You're saying Section 34 requires the regulator to license according to the IRP. Is that the current situation, or is that what is being proposed, that the regulator should regulate according to the IRP? If that's not the current situation, how is this arrangement? Is it an informal arrangement that where the regulator just considers the IRP and is not obliged to consider the IRP? The last question, Chairperson, is on where you say the minister must determine the buyer, the seller, and the type of energy technology to be used in generating electricity capacity. I'm a lay person in this area. I just want to be informed who would be, I understand the seller would be ESCOM and the IPPs. Now, who becomes the buyer? Those are.
Understand.
Thanks, Chair. And my apology for coming late. There was a bit of an accident along the road coming over. Just a couple of questions, not many. One is the issue of just that these slides have not been paced. It's written here under integrated resource plan. The regulator is required to license according to the determination made by the minister in accordance with the IRP. The word determination there and what it means. I just want to get more clarity on the kind of determination, because any decision by the minister can become a determination. And linked to that question is the question that it looks like the current situation is that the department regulates a number of areas. And we have regulators. Where do we want to go? Do we want to remove the department from regulating and leave the regulators to regulate? And if so, what are these determinations that the ministers will be making from time to time in regards to regulations, if they are not regulations themselves, through determinations? On the transmission planning slides, not sure if we really need this detail in an act, you know, where it says the plan must be approved by the regulator after consultation with the minister and the buyer to ensure alignment with the IRP. You know, that possibly those details about the IRP, the buyer, the minister, the regulator could be more easier in a regulation than in an act. What we need is perhaps just a principle statement without really going into the details. The details can be put in regulations. On the issue about expropriation, I just want to get a feeling of whether we are not anticipating resistance from the Department of Public Works. Has there been already consultation in between the departments? Has the matter been agreed upon? It does appear that you're saying cabinet has already approved this bill. And that's just by the principle of regulation as it stands now shows to be an anomaly. You can't have the department this side doing regulate. You know, this regulation is in different ways. There are regulations that are documents, but there's also the function to regulate. And if you appoint a body calling it a regulator and you continue to regulate, what does that body do? That contradiction needs to be straightened up, I think.
What is the logic of regulation? Because I'm not seem to be itching to do something.
I forgot one question which is linked to what last question that Honorable Slau has posed on expropriation. Can I just let on that? Chairperson, I just want to be clear, clarified by the department on this matter. I mean, it's nothing new as far as I know on expropriation, the creation of a service choice. If I'm a farmer and Eskom wants to build a power line, they obtain a servitude and there's a proper valuation of the land, and I get paid for their inability to use that piece of my land because you have put your transmission line. So what's new about this thing except the cost, the delays that you're talking about? Because it might, given this current political environment, people attach certain connotations to anything. What becomes new about this?
Sorry. Okay, Honorable Rosa, then Honorable Lucas.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just at my first glance, it gives me the impression that we are centralizing power once again to the minister. Whilst in the first act, I was very pleased to see that there's a strong regulatory role, and we spoke about the independence of the regulator, and I think that should be one of the founding principles in this act as well. Now, hopefully, it's mitigated by some of the determination, it's mitigated by some of the proper frameworks that you've mentioned. And perhaps you can just explain to us whether it's centralizing control to the minister or is there proper frameworks also to control the minister, whether when she is required to determine the buyer and purchaser and the type of technology used. Because is it not going to be problematic as it might inhibit the entry of private players in the electricity generation sector? Is it not a possibility, and then far from encouraging the private participation that we so desperately need? I hope this act will find that balance. And then just coming to pricing, and I'm so glad to see that my colleagues from NERSA is present, because we've had very fruitful discussions with NERSA regarding this. But I was pleased to see that there's an appeals mechanism, and we spoke about it, and of course we supported it. But why don't we get it right the first time before we get to appeals? And if this is the act that still has the clause of the cost of replacement of assets included in determining the prices, sorry, is there something else? When you have the... cost of replacement of assets still included and it inflates the prices. Now, if I look at what happened in the Act of, I think it's number 4 of 2006, the cost of replacement of assets is definitely very much specified there. In the new Act, and after having a look at the tariff principles, it says, and it's also a must, the regulator must do it. It's not that it may do. Enable an efficient licensee to recover the full cost of its licensed activities, of course, plus the allowed margin for profit. And I find this hugely problematic, and let me tell you why. And if you give me a minute, I'll just look into that. Because, Chair, in the presentation from NERSA, we found that the return of assets in the summary of the allowed revenue, that is, the allowed revenue that NERSA allows ESCOM to have as revenue, and that's where the price determination comes in. In the first year of 2010-2011, it was return on assets that was included was $3 billion. But on the second year, which we are currently in now, 11-12, it is $15 billion that adds to the allowed revenue. And in 2012-2013, it would be $33 billion. What effect would that have on pricing? And that's the problem. And I know this could be in terms of bookkeeper's terms, and Mr. Mulatto can perhaps give
it. I was about to say, can you clarify the question?
Yeah.
When you say return on assets, some would be bigger to present it. And is that the revenue that the regulator is allowing?
The thing I want to follow in this
yes,
is that the revenue that the regulator is allowing to ESCOM or whoever and say,
yes,
this is the type of revenue that you are allowing over the number of years. That's why I'm saying we need to.
This is the revenue allowed for a specific year.
Yeah.
And I'm saying 2010-2011. It is $3 billion, and 11-12 it's $15 billion. And then in 2012-2013 it's $33 billion. But I've got it, I have the presentation here. But it will inflate the prices. And then also, just another bookkeeper's item on depreciation. In the latter year, the last year, the depreciation that's added to allow ESCOM the revenue is $17 billion. But I think we have to do this calculation in order to fund the capital expansion program. I understand it. But, you know, if it's not only just, it is a bookkeeping arrangement, could be, but in the final analysis, it impacts on the consumer. Now, if I have the second amendment bill coming back to the current bill that we now in today, we started off by saying charging justifiable tariffs. Now, if we have to charge justifiable tariffs, we have to get the act right. And I think that really, I think this is where we need to revise it once again. Even we know the challenge that NERSA has and that ESCOM has, and they have to somehow make it balanced, but we have to be transparent in this. And I think that the tariff principles in terms of 15A needs to be revised. And perhaps if I must make a submission, a written submission, I will do so with the greatest pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. I was just going to go and speak about for some clarity under trading. You see, the minister may develop regulations outlining different categories of trading. And it also says the regulator will be required to license in accordance with the regulation. So won't there be some sort of delay if there's no regulation by the minister? Then just for clarity.
Pass the first round over to the department.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honourable members, for those questions. If I can start with the questions around the electricity dispatch, what is happening now, honourable member, is that the regulator licensed based on the ESCOM structure. What we are having at the moment is that the structure of ESCOM is you have generation, we have transmission, and you have distribution. Now, in some cases, you find that the transmission, which is the bunch of wires, is usually separated from the operations, which is what I call the dispatch. It's usually separated. And therefore, if that was the case, then they would be licensed differently. Now, the ISMO proposes the independent system market and operator proposes that you need to separate those two in order to create transparency in the way the dispatch mechanism is being done. So that will mean then that the regulator, once it licenses it, it will make sure that it puts the conditions on how things need to be done. Then that's when they're going to have sight of what happens in the dispatch. At the moment, they are licensing it, they are licensing as transmission, so it's like one big black box where they cannot see what really happens there. And having said that, their duties are going to be put down in the license conditions that they're going to put it, and they are going to monitor and regulate based on those license conditions. Now, in terms of the regulator licensing according to the IRP, maybe I just need to clarify what we're talking about here. The IRP simply says if we have this kind of economic development, or rather if we want this kind of economic development, this is the kind of energy we're going to need. So in other words, we're going to need, depending on the type of economic development that you have, say for example, we want to have lots of manufacturing. In other words, we get guided by the new growth path. The new growth path says, let's do lots of manufacturing in South Africa. That's energy intensive. Now, because it's energy intensive, then therefore we make predictions over the 20 years that if we're going to do manufacturing and we're going to create so many jobs, therefore, our economy must grow by so much. Now, if our economy is going to be growing by so much, it means our demand for electricity is going to be so much. Now, if our demand for electricity is going to be so much, therefore, we're going to need this kind of supply. Again, we go into detail and say, now, if it's going to be manufacturing and we're assuming that it's the kind of electricity demands we're going to be needing the whole day, so therefore it means we're going to need this type of primary energy. In other words, we're going to need coal, we're going to need nuclear, we're going to need all sorts of energies. While if, say, maybe our growth was going to be located in areas where you don't need energy intensity, then you need different type of energy, and therefore it means then you're going to need to balance. If we're going to bring in renewable energy, therefore we need to balance with this kind of energy. So that's what the IRP says. So the IRP simply just say we are going to need so much electricity, we're going to need this type of supply, and this is what gets given to the regulator, and the regulator is supposed to license based on that. However, the next step now is the question, who is going to build it? Now, if the questions are, who is going to build it? So it means that it can be either Eskom or the private sector. Now, if then we're saying that it's going to be built by Eskom, therefore, Eskom must go to the regulator and request for the license. Or if we're saying it's going to be done by private sector, then what is going to happen next is that private sector must go and request a license based on that. But before we can reach to that stage, we need them therefore to be able to determine, is it private sector that is building, or is it Eskom? And that is where the minister makes a determination. The minister makes a determination to simply say, based on this kind of criteria, which is in the implementation plan that we are presenting to Cabinet, because we are saying this is the criteria that we are going to follow. For example, Eskom is on record saying they cannot implement the whole IRP. They need private sector participation. So our question had to be, okay, Eskom, how much can you build based on your balance sheet? And therefore, so that we can ensure that private sector comes to the party. So that is the kind of determination that minister makes. So we have that information. So we need to take it now to Cabinet. Then we're going to publish it to say, okay, this part is going to be done by Eskom, and this is going to be done by private sector based on that kind of criteria. But having said that, when it came to the renewable energy procurement program, we made a conscious decision to say Eskom is not competent at this point in time to do renewable energy. Let's get private sector to bring it in, to actually do it. And that was the determination that was made by the minister. So there are checks and balances to ensure that there is an appropriate balance between the two. Now, in terms of who is the buyer, again, it's the kind of structure that we have in South Africa as we speak. What happens is that minister will only make that determination if we have a situation or rather in the current structure that we have. But in the future, it is expected, with the ISMO in place, it is expected that the ISMO is going to be a buyer. Yeah. So at this point in time, that determination is based on the current structure that we have. Now, again, going back with what does determination mean? Again, Honorable Members, determination, here, Minister is not regulating. Minister is simply saying, this is the amount of power that we're going to need. This is how much our utility can do. And therefore, private sector needs. That's it, only the determination that she does. After that, a proper if it's private sector, a proper procurement process gets followed, and then an award is made accordingly. But if it's ESCOM, there is no need to go through a procurement process. If they want to do their procurement process within their organization, then it's something else. But when it comes to private sector participation, you need to do everything in terms of promotion of Administrative Justice Act, where everything is done in a fair, transparent manner. So that is what that is basically what has got to be done. So that is about the only thing. Once then that has been done, she steps off, because then the independent system and market operator, which is what we are giving powers to do, we are giving the powers to in future to be running with the procurement process themselves, and making sure that and also we are in future, we're asking them also even to plan, in other words, to do the integrated resource plan. So all those duties we want to give them to the independent system and market operator. And then in terms of the regulating the energy sector, I will repeat it again, and that is law. What we're saying here, we're saying that at the moment, yes, the whole energy sector needs to be regulated centrally by the regulator. We're not talking now about licensing framework, setting of tariffs and all that. But this legislative regime that we have is not allowing that, and it is our intention this year to bring that legislation to Parliament to be reviewed and be streamlined so that the regulator can regulate everything from petrol to everything else. So I think it's also high time they also get to feel how we feel when petrol goes up. And then in terms of the transmission planning, I will agree with you that probably the portion about the plan being approved by the regulator in consultation with the minister probably needs to go into regulation. I agree with you. We'll definitely consider removing it from the primary act. But coming back to the issue of expropriation, okay, yes, DPW didn't have any objection to the expropriation. However, what is new in the expropriation? We have seen over time a very interesting trend. As soon as there's indication that either ESCOM or even maybe the municipality wants to do something in that piece of land, the price of that land goes up 10 times or even more. So what we're saying is that the idea here, we're saying that the custom, because by the way, these costs end up translating into the tariff. The electricity customer must pay fair value for the land. So what usually happens then is that once there's been a deadlock on the cost of the land, what usually happens then, we usually have a situation where the licensee and the owner of the land appoint an independent arbitrator to say, in my considered professional opinion, this land costs so much, and therefore that decision becomes final, and then that person gets paid based on that on that determination. However, you need to ensure then that there is a proper legislative process that you follow, because you know the property rights are enshrined in the Constitution. And then again, Honorable Ross, I would like to reiterate, the idea here is not to centralize the power to the minister. Let me just take you back before this legislation. Before this legislation, we had what was called an Electricity Act. The Electricity Act had something called Supplier of Last Resort. So basically, it was saying that when the lights go out, we'll hold Eskom responsible. So in other words, Eskom must make sure that they go out and procure power. That was the legislation at the time. However, we needed now to introduce private sector. Now, you cannot say private sector, who is going to be a competitor to Eskom, to be able to say Eskom, you are the supplier of the last resort. There is no incentive for Eskom to bring private participation. Hence, therefore, we had to say, government, you are responsible for the security of supply. If you are responsible for security supply and Eskom is unable to provide, to ensure the security of supply, then bring private sector to provide the security of supply. That's basically what that legislation is. So in a kind of a structure that we have in this country, somebody must be held accountable when the light goes off. And by asking the minister to be accountable, we are also saying that she therefore needs to be empowered to be accountable. So in other words, when the lights go off, then she should be responsible. That is also enshrined in the Energy Act. She is responsible for the energy security in the country. Hence, therefore, she needs to create appropriate legislation and regulation to ensure that takes place. Not because we want to centralize the power. We're simply saying somebody has got to be responsible. So, again, honorable members, if you feel she is not the right person to be responsible, then please help us to tell us who should be responsible so that we can put it in the law. Because somebody has got to be responsible. And then in terms of the issue that you have raised, definitely we'll welcome your input on how to make sure that the regulator is again empowered to do what you'd like them to be doing. So we'll definitely going to look into that. And then in terms of trading, Honorable Lucas, definitely we are going to look into that and probably address your concerns. But more than anything else, we really like to have your input in this regard. How would you like us to handle that clause around the trading? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, I thought we were going to finish so early. The First Amendment created that impression, but not with this one. A few from my side. Is there any significance or impact of the iterative nature of IRP? IRP 1, IRP 2, IRP 3, IRP 4. Am I correct that IRP will keep on changing? Now, how does the amendment cater for that? It could be interesting, because it's a, if I can use a crude word, it's a shifting sense. And if you could allow me a naive question, the integrated energy planning. I know it's in the future. Once the IEP is in place, I'm going to come back and make another amendment to cater for it. All along, not been talking about distribution here, because constitutionally it's the competence of the municipality. And I thought there would be some indication on how we link with that, unless there's no need to. But it's just an interesting, issue. I don't say maybe I must confess just my slowness in grappling with it, because whenever you mention buyer and seller, my mindset has been shifted that all that kind of functioning is going to be in the shoulders of ISMO in future. Now, how does it arise here? Or maybe you say, How will be the relations, the legislative relations now of the buying and selling, determination here in the amendment and the way ISMO works? Sorry if you have already answered it, but it just stuck in my mind, Probably that's another way of saying, which is something I would like us to do in future. We did pick up a lot about this in the papers, Men and Guardian in particular, a lot of complaint about misalignment. I didn't want to ask you, but now I've provoked it. Is there real genuine fear about, or a real cause to complain that there's misalignment between these three pieces of legislation? Particularly in any case, this one and the forthcoming this one. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Again, on the issue of the amendment impact on the RP, Chair, what the amendment seeks to do? It seeks to indicate how the IRP is going to be revised. So obviously that means then it's going to determine what are the triggers for the iterations to the IRP. Like for example in the IRP that we have, we've got specific triggers. For example, one of the triggers are going to be our projections, or rather our economic projections. Are they correct? If they are not correct, and they are significantly incorrect, then we need to go back and revise it. So it's going to indicate what will be the triggering mechanism to revise the IRP. So that's basically what the amendment seeks to do. So it's just to provide the criteria and the guide on how the IRP is going to be revised. So that's what the amendment does. Because currently, as it sits in the Act, it simply just says there shall be an IRP, but it doesn't say what is going to be the trigger mechanism to make sure that IRP is revised. So that is basically what we're trying to sort out. And then in terms of the IEP, Chair, you'll recall that the IEP is outlined in the Energy Act. And in the Energy Act, it's specific that we have to revise at what levels and how many times, et cetera, et cetera. So the IEP, when it's released, is not going to have an impact on the electricity regulation amendment at all, but it will have an impact on the IRP. So that's basically what is going to happen. So those are so that will be one of the triggers that we are going to be looking at. And Chair, if I can just go back on the issue of the alignment. It was exactly for this reason that all the three pieces of legislation were considered. It was to ensure that there is alignment among those three pieces of legislation. And one of the best things about calling this briefing is that when the ISMO comes in probably about 3 or 4 weeks' time, at least then you will be able to start relating on the amendments that we are doing in the Electricity Regulation Act and what are they going to impact, how are they going to impact the independent system and market operator. So that's basically why we had to have them done. We would have preferred them to be tabled, all three of them, in cabinet at the same time, but unfortunately the consultation that we had to do up front didn't allow us to do that. But that was the intention, so that everybody can see what is the alignment that is taking place in those three pieces of legislation. But going back to, again, to the issue of the buyer and the seller, you'll recall, Chair, we had said in this amendment that Minister should determine the buyer and the seller. Now, in the ISMO is going to be the buyer. Whether it's Eskom generated power or it's private power, they are going to be designated as a buyer of power. And then they will distribute. In other words, they are a wholesaler. Okay? And then they will distribute to all of us. That's basically the idea around the ISMO. So hence, therefore, in this amendment, we're talking about the buyer, but in the ISMO, the ISMO bill is going to be a designated buyer. That's basically where we're coming from. So hence, therefore, we needed to ensure that all these three pieces of legislation are considered at least in the same year, to make sure that there is that kind of understanding on the alignment. Thank you, Chair.
Exciting. But be careful, this is going to be quite a load for us.
My fear is NEDLAC. There has always been lots of differences in NEDLAC, especially insofar as the matter of distribution, electricity distribution is concerned. There are issues, the current situation is that Eskom, part of which will become ISMO, is selling both to municipalities and to direct individuals. Through this legislation or through regulations, is there a way through which we want to streamline that area as part of reducing the debates? Because there are people who feel strongly that electricity is the power for municipalities to be able to force people to pay rates and taxes. If you don't pay rates and taxes, we cut your electricity, then you come running to pay the old package, electricity plus the rates and taxes. And there are some people who believe that that process of municipality buying electricity and selling it to the individuals is expensive because the municipality then adds some profit into each unit. And therefore it would be much better if you get it directly to the people. So that there isn't consensus in the country at the moment relating to those two positions. What does the department think could be done to create a common approach that everybody can have to give up and accept this is how South Africa lives?
Any further input?
Thank you, Chair, and sorry for being late. I'll explain at the end of the meeting why I'm a bit late today. But the DG has sort of raised my... the bumper, you know, this Eskom thing. I mean, you're talking of, you know, the provider of last resort. Now the bill is going to change that. The minister is going to be doing a lot of that. And then you injected a little phrase there. There is no incentive for Eskom to do da 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 da. And that's really always the problem, because now we have ISMO. ISMO is coming, and it's going to be housed in Eskom. And the numbers we have been given is that globally, it takes 5 to 10 years for ISMO to be independent. And we've already had input from the deputy minister in parliament saying, no, he has been given the assurance that ISMO won't be that long in ESCOM. And the reason I say this is that ESCOM will not have an incentive to have ISMO outside ESCOM. So what is the ministry going to do to make sure that ISMO moves out as quickly as possible out of ESCOM so that it can be truly independent, so that these things that we envisage in the Act and everything else can be accomplished?
Any other input?
I hope I'm allowed to make a comment that I always thought that the minister is ex officio the responsible person when the lights go out. In the ultimate final analysis, when things go wrong in terms of generation capacity, like very closely the situation that we are now staring straight in the eyes, that when we have a 14% less production in terms of electricity, our reserve margins are very low, and when there's ESCOM is doing their level best to get the gas turbines working at a higher cost. Fortunately, that does not impact on the tariffs. We've clarified that. But ultimately, I think the minister in the final analysis, ex officio, I thought was always responsible. But just to add, I think what would be proper for us is to consult with industry and ask them how they feel about the legislation. And thank you very much for that opportunity, because they might say this might be harmful in terms of IPPs and that not. But just coming back to the costs, and I'm not sure if I'm allowed to do that. My information is that the cost needed and why it reflects so badly on consumers is because that we have a shortfall in terms of funding the ESCOM capital expansion project of about 90 billion. We need to get to that figure somehow. And of course, then we have to get tariffs from people to fund that. And I think that's hugely problematic, because now current consumers are now paying for future generation costs, and I think we've spoken about it. And I think you yourself has remarked once that, we hope we can get to a situation one day where consumers are paying for consumption and not for capital expenditure. And that would be the ideal. And it's very difficult for the regulator. And I'm sure the regulator knows, and they would like to do that, but how can they do it? And so we have to look at the funding models of how can we fund this capital build program. And I think government has extended themselves to do it. But somehow, and I think this is where our finance people comes in, and it needs to be part of the bigger fiscal debate, where we need to get to a situation where we say that government should provide more guarantees, or we should get to some sort of bonds, or we could get to infrastructure bonds or energy bonds. And there's a lot of initiatives in terms of funding, and perhaps DG, with the permission of the chair, if we can perhaps schedule with finance people, the fiscal and finance commission, perhaps to see, because we have to alleviate that shortfall to see that we get to a better result in terms of consumers, because certainly they can't absorb these prices anymore, and that's very negative for our interests and what our national goals is in terms of what we would like to achieve. And if we can schedule that, I think it would be a very good departure that we put electricity pricing into the domain of the fiscal debate. And just the remarks to justify my comments, perhaps, is the Reserve Bank governor that indicated that electricity prices should be very much related to inflation rate, to the inflation rate. The inflation being 6.6, and we are talking of 5 times 25%. It's hugely problematic, but I understand that the regulator is placed in a very peculiar situation. Now, just on the Act, it says they must consider. We can consider that it must perhaps say they may consider, and that we also have some hold in terms of ESCOM's application, that whatever ESCOM demands is not granted, and that will fall in line with the independence of the regulator. Just a remark in terms of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. With regards to the meeting with the FFC, it was going to be my answer to Honorable Slow around the issue of the distribution, because the issue of the distribution, it's really not an electricity matter. It's a financial matter, in the sense that you mentioned about three issues. One, electricity as a credit control measure. You mentioned also the electricity to raise revenue for various people, and also ESCOM's ability to do that on the municipality's behalf. So effectively, all those issues that we have mentioned, they all involve the fiscal regime of local government. So what I'm going to recommend is that probably we need some advice from FSC to be saying, how do you handle this matter, which is a matter of local government financing regime. So I think I would definitely will agree with the issue that we definitely need to look into that from the point of view of the financial regime of municipalities. You'll recall that as DME previously, we tried to do the restructuring and it didn't work because of a number of challenges. And one of the issues that have been problematic in the whole restructuring has been around the municipal fiscal regime. So until such time that gets addressed, all the issues that we have just raised are going to continue to manifest until such time we have sorted out the issues of local government funding. Now, Honorable Mtawaran, the ISMO bill, or rather how soon the ISMO is going to be done. My sense is that that will have to be in the legislation. That is the only way you can make sure it happens if it's in the legislation, to be able to say by such and such a time, such activities, or alternatively to be able to say this should be the triggers. In fact, we have requested, by the way, to ESCOM to assist us that we don't set unrealistic time frames. We have requested that they need to assist us with their risk assessment metrics, which is what they are working on at this point in time, to say, if you do this by such and such a time, these are the following risks. This is how you need to mitigate them. So that's basically what we're going to do. So in other words, we're going to request them when we come and make a presentation to actually assist us with that risk risk mitigation metrics going forward. And then with regards to the regulator, the regulator has to ensure that the industry is sustainable. In other words, ESCOM should be able to continue to operate. But also at the same time, it is their duty to ensure that customers are protected against high tariff, which is what we're trying to do in the legislation. I think what happens probably maybe we just have to, we are receiving input from them, by the way, that will ensure that they are able to do their duties in this regard.
Okay. Any further inputs? Well, let me thank the department for the inputs that it has made, the briefing on both laws. But the impression that is emerging is that we're going to have on our hands a complex process. And obviously, honorable members, we definitely have to work out a very creative way of handling these three pieces of legislation. Probably not necessarily at the same time, but how they link up to each other, which is why I asked the issue of the alignment as well. Maybe one of the things that could help us with is to just indicate if there's a way of persuading NEDLAC to give priority to the laws, because one of the bills is already on its way. Now, if there would be a large gap between processing of ISMO and these, even for us, it wouldn't be that helpful. But at least if they could be following each other. But obviously, we can try and do that persuasion. We know that life is something else. There are
various social partners in NEDLAC who, on their own right, have got to make input, and at the end of the day, they've got to take consensus. But, you know, from the input we've received today, that's very clear. And also the fact that we're entering, you know, a situation whereby we are refining regulation or the regulatory environment, you know, and also bringing in quite a number of new tools. You know, we didn't have IRPs, in fact, the eSMOS, you know, a department that specifically looks, you know, into energy, and also the IPPs, and all of that, I'm sure, will all obviously take out all our old documents and look at them and prepare ourselves in an empowering way to handle these three pieces of legislation as we move into them. Just a comment around the ESCOM thing to Nature Ismo. Honorable Dow, whilst we can look at that from a legislative angle, we also have an oversight rule on that. I'm sure we'll have a hawk's eye, given the significance of ISMO, you know. So, maybe we will not be folding our arms and just say that there is a piece of law that has been promulgated, so let, you know, ESCOM incubate, you know, ISMO. It has to be part of our, you know, annual planning or term-based planning, you know, from time to time to check on ESCOM, notwithstanding whatever creative, you know, legislative crafting would have done. I'm sure I'm committing everyone, and rest assured, if you assign, you know, the appropriate significance to the law, the ISMO Act, you know, we then have to ensure its appropriate realization as well. Yeah, there are a number of other things that are coming. The issue of stakeholder inputs on the legislative process, although it came specifically around the role of FFC. I'm sure honorable members will all concur that as we move along in processing these bills, we've got to ensure and as much stakeholder input as is possible. We'll work it out as each piece of legislation comes in. It has to be because of the significance of in all of them. You know, they may have taken a very short time, I mean, if you look at the time, but their impact, once the president start, you know, puts his signature and they promulgated, you know, we know the you know, the significance and the impact of all these deals. Well, one takes note as well about some of the concerns that have been raised by members, and responses have been made. But I'm sure we'll keep that in mind, you know, once we roll our sleeves and actually get into the, you know, processing of the bills themselves, you know, one thinks of one or two areas, particularly there are the risk of centralization and the effect of return of assets on price. And all of that, maybe a little bit outside, but the issue of the risk of centralization, I'm sure it would be clearer when we handle the bills. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, the department and NERSA, I suppose they've come to. Oh, you've got something. Oh, it's still okay. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Apologies.
Yes.
I'm glad you are quite motivated to make further input.
No, Chairperson, it's just to make an announcement that I've grown younger yesterday and was enjoying my 60th birthday.
I see why it's late.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, it's still committee week, that's why we missed some of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
He had a long night. I thought he looked much younger and smoother this morning. So, anyway, Chairman, mine is on a different note. This is probably going to be my last session with you guys. I probably love you or leave you. I believe there's going to be some announcements we made. In fact, as I talk now, they're probably making it about who's going to do what in the shadow cabinet. So watch this space in case I'm not back next time around. Thank you very much.
Hey, people, why this? Why this interesting announcement? No, you can't afford to start depleting this. At least one is growing younger, which is helpful. We have more vigor and energy. But depleting this team is not going to be that helpful. Now, we have been with a drought on legislation last year, and all of a sudden we are getting floods, and the team is getting depleted. Well, whatever is going to come, we'll wish you well in the in whatever changes that will come in your life. Baba Lucas?
I'm just asking for your permission. There's something else outside what we've been discussing,
okay.
But in the energy department, it's the fuel issue. Can I just, if you want to, could I ask the question?
Sure.
Yes. If the petrol issue, fuel. Can I continue?
Okay.
Now, I'll just say this. There's been a major concern from the community, especially the motor car owners, because filling stations, surprisingly, that the price is rising so much, have been running out of fuel. But a couple of weeks ago, when that question was asked, you haven't got sufficient fuel, they were saying, no, we have. So I'm a bit concerned, because if you can imagine if someone would say it's got 10,000 litres on yesterday's price, and today he's adding 3 rand on that price, what the profit he's going to make. So I'm really concerned. We need to look into this here. And the increase of 34 cents was exceptionally steep. And when we looked at the control or the price control is beyond our, but still the price the value of our rand weakened tremendously, but the price of crude was hovering around 109, 108, 110 for the whole of the last month. So one never expected that huge increase.
Snell, I'll protect you on this one. I didn't realize that Ndate Lucas will bounce such a heavy question. But still, I will ensure that you're not off the hook. In this manner, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we had a session in Durban around refineries and also engaged the industry. Can this issue be noted such that when we submit the report on our oversight visit, unavoidably, that the locals is going to come up, because amongst other things, when we debated, particularly if you remember the Western morning, this matter is inescapable. In fact, one of the things, let me propose it, is that let's do something unique. Let's make sure that our report is presented in two stages, so that the first stage will allow some more debate around it, because quite a number of issues were brought into the picture, you know, even for some of us, except those who are in the industry, you know. So if you don't mind, let's have just that balanced approach. Let's take note of it, but let's agree also when handling the report of our oversight visit, we can't escape, you know, not talking about it. And I'm sure, although it was only the retailers association that were present that time, and the wholesalers were not there, I'm sure when we have the report presented, even the wholesalers will be around to make an input as well. Because what he's raising is quite a touchy issue. You know. Can I please, let's close for now. Let me thank everyone, and let me thank the department, and let's hope that we will work and coordinate as creatively as possible this year on the legislation, because it's not only this one. I mean, I kept on going back to the list, there's gas, there's Petroleum Amendment Act, you know, there's this and that. Now I was saying, my God, how can you have drought in 1 year and have a flood in the other year? It just means that we have to roll our sleeves. And I think also on the other hand, honourable members,
we'll have to try and work out a way of ensuring that from time to time there's some empowerment being done. We just don't have to take for granted that we just have bills put in front of us and we can handle them. We've got to have some conceptual and understanding and deep understanding, you know, on the bills themselves. They are quite intricate. And so that is how you concur with me. In fact, even in my previous world in trade and industry, even if we handle massive bills, you know, Credit Regulation Act, you know, Consumer Protection, the Companies Act, they at least stand alone. They took a lot of our time. Now, all of a sudden here, we have three pieces of legislation, some quite slim in terms of size, but interlocked, you know, and we've got to ensure that they are well balanced. So let's psychologically prepare ourselves for that. Thanks very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
No, I don't know what to do.